we begin, and I'm going to let you introduce this gentleman. His son, Bubba, worked for you at that wonderful casino that you put on the map many years ago, and he was a confidant of mine through a dear friend, Jim Leland, who, of course, former manager of the Pirates. He was his sidekick, his partner, if you will, third base coach, a great baseball mind, wonderful father, superhuman being, who I got to know during my 20-plus years doing play-by-play in East Liverpool because his son was scorching us as a member of the Big Red basketball team just about every time we played, meaning Bubba. So, if you will, just some thoughts about Rich, and then we'll get him on the air here.
Hey, Rich. Rich is just probably epitomizes the Ohio Valley and the kind of people that come out of the Ohio Valley. Super sports star, has been very successful in the management ranks, but when he comes back to the Ohio Valley, he is one of the guys. And his son worked at Mountaineer, did a phenomenal job. He's got Richie's personality, just would bring everybody in, make them feel warm. But you're not going to meet a more genuine, more caring, more honest human being than Richie himself.
Well, somehow I got to believe when they do the doubleheader thing in which your son's team, the Oakland Golden Bears, Tony Faberto, going to be a part of at Harding, somehow between games with the Cyclones up there in New York, that minor league team for the Mets, he'll find a way to get a jet or a helicopter or even a bicycle if he has to, or maybe even a horse, a thoroughbred, and ride it to Harding to see his Big Red. Nobody has done more or supported high school sports more than this guy. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome to KDK one of the dearest men on the planet. He is Rich Donnelly. Rich, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Rob. Good morning, Ted.
Hey, Rich. How are you?
Good, buddy.
Listen, Rich, when you told me this story, and I was telling my producers today a little bit about it, and our chief engineer, Vic Pasquarelli, who was here, I've known so much about you, and shame on me for not remembering or missing this story. But after you told me the story, and then I YouTubed it and saw the piece that was done by the very talented Melissa Etheridge on YouTube on Lifetime, I was brought to tears, and it's been on my mind ever since. And I look at life a whole lot differently now than I did prior to seeing that. And I want to take a break here so you have the entire segment to discuss it. But your daughter, who passed away a few years ago from cancer, just let's talk about her as an individual before we tell this amazing story. I know how special my daughter is to me. And I got to tell you, in recent weeks, every time I look at her, I think of you. I can't even imagine what that must have been like, losing her at such a young age.
Well, Rob, you know, I have eight children, and, you know, I was very fortunate to have Amy for the 17 years that we had her. She was a unique individual. She was probably the most unselfish person in the world I've ever met. She always wanted to be a teacher when she grew up, and I always tell people now she was the greatest teacher I've ever had. She contacted a brain tumor. And the doctor, when she was 17, the doctor told her she had 9 months to live. And, you know, I mean, this is the part that has driven me to go around the country and speak about her life, about the way she conducted her life. But in the 9 months that she knew she was going to pass away, she was the most unselfish person. She worried about me. She worried about her mom. She worried about brothers and sisters. She was not worried about herself. And I always tell people, in those 9 months, She taught me how to live, and she taught me how to die.
All right, we'll be back, and we'll tell you about the chicken that ran at midnight. Literally, that's next with my buddy Rich Donnelly and Ted Arnault on KDK. It's 11:14.
We're Pittsburgh's source for local news and talk. News Radio 1020, KDKA. Rob Pratt is bringing his A-game. Are you? Black and Gold Sunday. News Radio 1020, KDKA.
Today's program brought to you by Rome Monument. Life is a journey. Memorialize the journey. Allegheny General Hospital Sports Medicine, helping athletes of all levels return to the game. Anthony Jr.'s Pizzeria in Coriopolis, the home of Pittsburgh's favorite Italian cuisine. Coons Market, a Pittsburgh tradition. Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield, helping you have a greater hand in your health. And the club at Shadow Lakes. Back now with Ted Arnault, Rich Donnelly, Black and Gold Sunday, Coons Market, and Hopewell. The chicken runs at midnight, and I'll tell you, if I didn't see it myself with that Melissa Etheridge piece, even after you told me, I would have never believed this story. So if you will, Rich, go right ahead.
Okay, I'll just try to do this in a capsule form. 1992, spring training, Bradenton, Florida. I'm sitting on my apartment floor after a workout. The phone rings. Like I say, I have 8 kids, so I get calls all the time. It was my daughter, Amy. She said, "Dad, I have something I have to tell you." And, of course, I got worried at 17 years old. I said, "Oh, boy, this could be anything." She goes, "Dad, I have a brain tumor, and I'm sorry."
Yeah.
And when she said, "I'm sorry," that got me. Because that showed me right there she was more concerned about her dad than she was about herself. So, anyway, doctor said she had a tumor behind her eye or behind her nose, and she had to go in and they had to get it. So they operated on her about a week later, and the doctor came in and told me and her mom that it was malignant, and they couldn't get it all. And he says, "I'm just going to tell you straight up, she has about 9 months to live." So we said, "Well, we're going to fight this," and we did, and she did. She fought it unbelievable with chemo and everything else, and she was so happy. She was always worried about everybody else. And she was down there in Children's Hospital in Dallas, and eventually now comes the time for playoffs. And I had a dear friend in Texas, and he flew her up for – we were playing the Atlanta Braves, and she came up for the 5th game, and she was in the stands that night. And after the game, we had won the game. It was a great game by Bob Walk. I still remember. And she said she was in the back seat. She leaned forward. She says, "Dad, when you got a man on second base and you get in that stance of yours, a third base coaching box, you put your hand, you cup your hands around your mouth." She said, "What are you telling those guys? A chicken runs at midnight or what?" And I went, "What? Where the heck did you come up with that one, Amy?" She said, "I don't know. It just came out." So we laughed about it. And all during the summer, every time we'd write a letter, back then there were no cell phones, so we did a lot of letter writing. We'd always sign all our letters CRAM, chicken runs at midnight. So now we get into the playoffs, and I told her, I said, "If we get to go to the World Series, well, you're coming." And Toronto had won the American League, and, of course, we played in Atlanta. And right before the 7th game, she sent me a note in Atlanta, and the girl came down and gave it to me in the clubhouse. She said, "Dear Dad, the chicken runs at midnight. Love, Amy." And, of course, that was a game, the infamous game where Francisco Cabrera got the hit, and we did not get to go to the World Series. And she was crushed, not for her, but for me. So time went on. That was October, then November, December, and January. She lapsed into a coma, and the doctor said this will be real tough. And of course, on January 23rd, 1993, she passed away. And we, as a family, went to the graves or went out to the cemetery, and they wanted to put all these flowery phrases on her tombstone. He said, No. He said, "We're going to change this up. We want to put the chicken runs at midnight on her gravestone." So that's what we did. And it was kind of funny now, because when you go to the website, you see that, you think of her. And we never thought anything of it. So, you know, years later, that was 93. So, you know, we were the Pirates a couple more years. And we go to Florida with Jimmy. And in 97, of course, we get in the playoffs. And by Lord, we get to the World Series. And my sons, Tim and Mike, Amy's brothers, they got to be bat boys. So they were there. And now we go to the 7th game. And we had a third base or a second baseman named Craig Counsell, who, by the way, is still playing for the Brewers. In fact, he'll be in Pittsburgh tomorrow. And he used to bat. He still does. With his left hand, he flaps it before he hits. He's like a chicken. So my kids all called him the Chicken Man, you know. So, of course, Craig Counsell's on third base. And the World Series, 11th inning, 7th game, Edgar Renteria gets the base hit with 2 outs. Craig Counsell scores a winning run. And there's complete euphoria, 80,000 people. I'm running around, grabbing people, kissing them, hugging them. I don't know who's who. Jimmy's running around the outfield. All of a sudden, I see my son, Tim, and he's running at me. And something's wrong. He's crying. He's screaming. Something's wrong. I said, "This isn't normal. You're supposed to be happy." He's screaming. I mean, just screaming, crying. I said, "What's wrong with you?" He says, "Dad, look." He says, "Look where?" He said, "Look behind you." And in a third base coaching box down there, Pro Player Stadium, there's a stadium clock. I looked around. Clock said 12 o'clock midnight. He said, "Dad, the chicken ran at midnight." And I went from complete joy to just all the air gets sucked out of your body. The chicken, Craig Counsell, scored the winning run at midnight, just like she said 4 years earlier. And after that game, of course, you had a celebration and all that, and it was about 4 in the morning, and I got Tim and Mike in the car, and we got that note. I kept it with me every day, still do. I kept that note, and we all looked at it. We said, you know what? We'd like to call her and tell her, yeah, Amy, the chicken did. It did run at midnight. And throughout the years now, it's become a, like I say, we're in the process of doing a motion picture about it, and the articles have been everywhere, and I go speak all over the country on it, and because I know that Amy would have wanted me to do that for her, and that's why I do it. I do it because she would have done it for me, and just try to help other people out. Everybody, every family, and you know this, Rob, Ed, everybody you've met, they always, everybody has problems. I don't care what they are, and maybe through what happened with our family, this can help some other family. So that's why it's so, I mean, if you like sports, everybody's part of a family, and if you like sports, it touches everybody, and it's just it's turned into a wonderful thing, Rob.
You know, I tell you, I don't know. And everybody told me that Jim Leland cried a lot. Well, I believe me, Jim Leland, he doesn't shed any H2O compared to me. I cry at the drop of a hat, but especially when it comes to family and children. And I got to tell you, Rich, I still can't believe the significance of this story and just the amazing aspect of this story, but the strength of this young woman to be worrying about you, brothers, everyone else, as opposed to herself, when she was the one with the death sentence, basically knowing. And we've all wondered how we would approach life if we knew that our time on this earth was limited to X amount of days or months or even a year for that matter. And she just embraced every minute of it, and yet we all are spiritual. I mean, at least I know how I am as far as towards my faith, proud to be a Catholic. But no matter your denomination, you know, faith cometh by hearing, they say, and hearing by the word of the Lord and embracing it and understanding about there's got to be something bigger than this place called Earth. What kind of connection spiritually do you make to this, if anything? Because honestly, this thing is so unique, Rich and Ted and everyone listening. I don't think you can call it a coincidence.
Well, you know, in this life, and like I say, we've all had a lot of fun. I know Ted and I have had a lot of fun together, and Ted has had a wonderful life. He's had a lot, some great ups. He's had some downs, like all of us. But I always tell people this, and Amy taught me this. There's two kind of people in this world. Those that are humble, and those that are about to be. And in my life, I was about to be. My ego got a little out of hand. And it was like, it was a message that it's a shame that it took this to bring me down and say, hey, you know, you ain't what you think you are. It's not about you. It's about everybody else. It's about doing the right thing. And that's my lesson that I've learned from this. And like I say, if she is a 17-year-old, I know myself, if I was 17 years old and you told me I had 9 months to live, I know I would have been bitter. Why me? And all this stuff. But her, that's what's so amazing about her. 17, she knew, and she lived every day like it was her birthday. And she was not going to let, you know, she was more worried about everybody else. And that's the lesson. That's what we should be doing in this life. We should be worrying about other people and not ourselves all the time. Because I think sometimes in this life, I could tell somebody, we got too many mirrors in our house. I told my wife, take all the mirrors out of our house. I'm tired of looking at myself.
Well, let me just tell you this, and I want to take a break because I want to try to wrap with a note of just a smile after that, because I think she would want it that way. And I want to talk about something that you know better than anyone that I know, and that's baseball. But just remember, as our dear friend Frank Dawson, all of us know him from East Liverpool, be humble and don't stumble. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Stories.
Senator Costa, good morning.
Kind of turning up the heat on the Marcellus issue.
Pennsylvanians have clearly said a Marcellus Shale tax that drives the money back out to our local communities
Needs to be enacted here in this Commonwealth.
The station.
The inequity is vast and actually despicable and rather disgusting. State senators pay 1% towards health care.
State representatives pay nothing.
Pay nothing, nothing.
These are the stories. This is the station. Keep the preset on 1020. News Radio 1020. KDKA. It's sports down and dirty. Pittsburgh style. Black and Gold Sunday with Rob Pratt. News Radio 1020. KDKA.
Still to come within the hour, 25 years, the head writer covering the National Football League for the marvelous media outlet known as the Associated Press. Dave Goldberg will join us from his home in New York. But right now we're talking to, speaking of New York, the man who runs the Cyclones, of course, AAA affiliate of the minor league affiliate of the New York Mets. He is here with us, Rich Donnelly. Rich, I want to talk a little baseball, and thank you again for sharing that wonderful story with your heart on your sleeve, difficult to get through, and I think it's a movie that's got to get done, and obviously it will help many people, as it has me and many others prioritize, and God bless you for sharing that with us, and Amy will always be close to all of us for that story. But I want to ask you about why you're in minor league baseball right now, when you're a guy who's been in the bigs your entire career. I still felt that you should have got a shot as a big league manager. I'm still hoping maybe somehow that does happen. I know those jobs are tough to come by, but why minor league baseball? What made you decide to go back to the grassroots?
Well, Rob, I was out of baseball last year. In fact, I was out in L.A. during the first part of the movie that hopefully we'll get done here in the next couple of years. And I missed it terrible. And I was out there probably to August, September. And when I came back, you know, most of the jobs in the big leagues were taken. And the thing I always enjoyed when I did do it, I managed 10 years in the minor leagues back with Jimmy, when Jimmy managed in the minor leagues, and I really enjoyed it. And I got a call from Wally Backman, the great Met player who managed at Brooklyn here last year. And he says, Rich, there's a rumor going around the Mets that they want you to take this Brooklyn job. And I had some dear friends call me, Mike Hargrove, and then Paul DePodesta, who's the assistant general manager here. They called me and says, Rich, this is a great opportunity. And I started thinking about it, and they said, hey, this is a different place. It's rookie ball, but we draw, I think we're up to 7,000 a night. It's on Coney Island. It's in a beautiful ballpark. And it's not the normal rookie team, but where you draw like, you know, 600-700 people a night. And it's owned by the New York Mets. It's owned by the Wilpons. And it's just run like a big league team. I have three coaches. I have the great former Cy Young winner, Frank Viola, is my pitching coach. It's just run like a big league team. And I thought, well, if I ever go back, I'd like to go to a place that's very attractive. And it sure is here in Brooklyn. So I'm glad I did. We got 2 weeks to go. We're right in the middle of a pennant race. And I'm having a lot of fun.
Boy, Frank Viola, that's a name out of the past. And he really was probably the last generation of those great pitchers like Drysdale and like so many others that were just, you know, they would challenge you. And if you got any, like Bob Gibson, I was trying to think of, if you would go anywhere near where they didn't want you to be as far as crowding the plate, they'd give you a little chin music. Boy, he was a hell of a competitor, wasn't he?
Well, he was a Cy Young winner. In fact, the art players are so young now that I told them, you know, Frank won the Cy Young. And they go, Cy Young, who's he? And I... He said, was he a rock star or was he a hip-hopper? And I'm going, oh, my goodness. You got to be careful. And I know Ted knows this. When you start telling stories about the old Steelers and L.B. Nickel and guys like that, you know, guys look at you like, who was that?
You know? Oh, geez. You know, it is amazing, though. Wally Backman, I remember him well. I mean, he was the Phil Garner of his era. He, blood and guts. Guy loved to get his uniform dirty. Just tremendous player.
Played for the Pirates one year.
You know what? You're right. I forgot about that. You know what's amazing about that time that you and Jimmy had here? Who would have ever thought that we'd be all these years later still looking back at it, obviously because it was the last time that the franchise won. But I still think that we need to remind people that 3 years might have been the best 3 years that any franchise has ever had, maybe other than the glory days with the New York Yankees. You guys were really, really on a roll those 3 years, weren't you?
Well, you know what, Rob? The thing I'm most proud of, and I think Jim and I talk about it all the time, in those 3 years, we never added one free agent. In fact, we lost a couple. We lost Bonilla. We lost Smiley. And we still won. And the first year was probably the most satisfying because we finally beat those darn Mets. And then the second year, we won by 8 or 9 games. And the third year, I think we won by 22 games. And we were the team we thought in baseball. And then we had the deal in Atlanta. But sometimes the best teams don't win in the playoffs. It's the teams who are the hottest. And we found that out with the Marlins. We weren't the best team, but we were the best team for 2 weeks.
Let's talk about, and Bobby obviously went to the Mets for $29 million. Looking back, what they're making today, that's like a walk in the park. But he goes there. I think Smiley went to the Reds. But what I remember the most were just the greatness of, and whether you like him or not, and I will always support Barry Bonds as far as what he did on the baseball field. In my opinion, one of the greatest ever. And somehow, some way, with what we're seeing that has developed with that whole juiced era, if, hey, you put one in, you got to put them all in. As far as sheer talent, I still have to argue whether or not that actually enhanced someone's game. You have to be able to play the game. And Barry Bonds, I think, if he would have stayed the splendid splinter as he was when he was in Pittsburgh, he would have ended up in the Hall of Fame. I just believe he was that good. But with Barry and, you know, Andy, and the list just goes on and on. As far as the nucleus, what made them so damn good, Rich?
I think the way that Jim conducted, Jim was like the orchestra. He was like the orchestra, the guy leading the orchestra.
Maestro.
The maestro. And he knew who to touch. He knew who to not touch. And I'm telling you what, that clubhouse, I used to go to work. This is an honest to God. I used to go to work at 11 o'clock in the morning. Couldn't wait for the guys to get there to have so much fun. We had these little basketball tournaments in the clubhouse. We had, the guys were on each other all the time. But when that game started, I don't care if you didn't like one another, if Bobby did, or if Andy didn't speak to Barry or Barry didn't speak to Andy, it didn't matter. When that game started, we all came together. And my wife even tells me now, she goes, you know, you've been in this game 42 years, and the most fun you've ever had was those 3 years where you were winning, and Jim was just the maestro of that whole thing, and he's the one that conducted that orchestra to a symphony.
Am I wrong to say Sparky Anderson, Stengel, Joe Torre, Tony La Russa, don't you have to put Jim Leland in that category, Rich?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes people just look at, you know, wins, and sometimes you have a team, with no disrespect to the Reds. I mean, they have 7 or 8 Hall of Famers on that team. They're the Big Red Machine. And, you know, in Pittsburgh, you know, we had Bonds, the best player in the game. But we had, you know, tremendous contributions from Gary Reedus, from Don Slott, from, you know, Spanky LaValle, Jay Bell. These guys aren't Hall of Famers, but they're really, really good Major League players. And Jim got them and put them in the right position. Sid Bream, I mean, you can go all the way around. Chico Lynn is still one of the best second basemen that ever played. And he got that team. I mean, he was amazing. He said he managed that team like they had bags on their heads. In other words, he cared what you did, not who you are. And that's the way he managed that team. And over the course of you know, if you give Jim a decent team like he has now, I tell you what, I ain't putting my money against him. The Tigers are probably going to win that division.
3.5 out in front today.
And then 3 or 4 years ago, they were in the World Series. He's been a winner all his life. If you check his minor league, everybody forgets he was in the minor leagues for about 15 years. And check out how his teams did in the minor leagues. He came to Pittsburgh with the worst team in baseball in 1986. Heck, people would call up and say, "What time is the game?" And our ticket people would say, "What time could you be here?" I mean, we were bad. Hey, Rob, the first night, Mike Brown, our outfielder, during the national anthem, he looked over at Jim. And he was a starting right fielder. And this is a true story. And he said to Jim, they were playing the national anthem. He goes, "Hey, Skip," he says, "every time I hear this song, I have a bad game." So, I mean, we were bad. We were real bad. And
bad were you?
He took this team, 1986. I want you to look at that team with those silly hats and 19 of those train conductor hats.
Yeah.
1986, and in 4 years, we were on top of the baseball world. Now, that is not by accident. That's by smart trade. That's by tremendous management. And, you know, Jim Leland absolutely should be mentioned with those guys that you had spoken of before.
All right. Now, look, I just a couple of more things, and then I know you have to go, but I got to keep because I there's so much I want to talk to you about. We never have a chance to really get caught up, and I know Ted loves having you here. But, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, and I can handle it. I've had arguments with people, constructive arguments, with great people that know a whole lot more about sports than me. Jeff Hathorn, our sports director, is one. Today, Jessica Berardino, who is in her early 20s, Muskingum College, we all know it well, in Ohio, the alma mater of the great John Glenn, former senator, astronaut, you know, the guy in orbit, the 60s, the whole thing. Well, she's got a throwback jersey on that I noticed today, number 21, Roberto Clemente. And I thought to myself, you know, it's going to be sad 20 years from now that there's not some young producer, on-air talent, intern, what have you, wearing a Barry Bonds throwback jersey. As far as pure talent, now work with me just for a moment and just bear with me. As far as sheer talent, I do believe, and Roberto Clemente was great, there's no doubt, but being able to do it all, five tools, especially with power, speed, throwing, I believe Barry Bonds in his prime and Clemente in his prime was a better baseball player than Roberto Clemente. Now, I just think history is going to destroy. It's such a shame, and it breaks my heart. Forget about what he did off the field. That's not my concern. But what he did in between the lines, day in and day out, he was tremendous. That's my opinion.
A couple things, and I think you're right, Rob. When we always talked about this, that he may have been the greatest player of all time. This guy won seven MVPs. He could do everything for a long period of time. He's the only man in baseball history that won MVPs 10 years apart. When he was with Pittsburgh, he was a more versatile player. He stole bases. He's a six-time Gold Glove winner, thanks to Bill Verdon and his relentless group with him. He's a great base dealer. He could do everything. And, you know, nobody loved Roberto more than me. I grew up a Pirate, and I tell this story all the time. My mom and dad take me to the Pirate games, and if they lost, they would stop at Tony Dale for ice cream, and I would not get out of the car. My mom said, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "They lost on purpose. They didn't try hard enough." I mean, I was a Pirate. I kept score of every game. Pirate will always be in me, and Roberto will always be the greatest to me. He will always be the greatest. That's why Prince called him the greatest. But in the whole picture, I think Barry Bonds was the best player I've ever seen. And Jim and I talked about this a lot. He may be. He's the only one to have seven MVPs. He may be the greatest player of all time.
Well, look, you can't speak. Hold that thought. I want to come back. We'll take a break. Rich Donnelly, Ted Arnold, we'll continue on Black and Gold Sun in a moment.
When you're on the road, we're on it with KDKA All Day AAA Traffic. Pittsburgh's official traffic station is KDKA. Get on it. Set a traffic button on the AM side of your radio. News Radio 1020 KDKA. The Black and Gold Sunday Show with Rob Pratt. News Radio 1020 KDKA.
All right, we're back. What do you think? Rich Donnelly, Ted Arnault, 11:46, next hour, Dave Goldberg. Last segment with Rich, and we've got to let him go. But, Rich, do you think that Barry just got caught up in it? And in defense of Barry, when your dad's Bobby Bonds, who had some issues of his own, I think growing up in that environment, sometimes the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So I'm not going to totally blame everything on Barry. But do you think he just got caught up in, and was it the norm in baseball at that time, do you think? And I don't even want to make you, you know, say something that maybe you're not supposed to say and even admit that there was this steroid thing that some people are still trying to avoid that were in the game. But what happened to Barry Bonds, who he went from this tremendous gazelle-like athlete to this incredible Hulk hitting baseballs farther than anybody ever has or maybe ever will?
Well, you know, there was a definite physical change in him. You can't deny that. And I tell people this story here. And a policeman told me this once. He said one time he was driving down the street and driving on a highway, and this couple stopped him. And he said, "There's a guy in back of us. We passed him, and he's weaving all over the road, and he's drunk, and you better stop him." So the cop waited for this guy. He was weaving all over the road. The cop pulls him over. Well, the guy actually wrecked into the side of the road. And the cop pulled him over, and he said, "I'm going to get this guy good for drunk driving." Well, they found out the guy had a heart attack.
Oh.
And so my point is sometimes things aren't always as they appear. And like I say, yeah, he got big. Do I know for sure anything? No. Can I I can guess. I can say whatever I want. Maybe he did take steroids, that maybe he did do this. Something made him get bigger. Weight, steroids, for sure, I don't know. Did he definitely get bigger? Absolutely. And yes, during that time, otherwise he wouldn't have had a problem. There were a lot of guys that got big and hit 220. And there were a lot of guys who were 190 and they got bigger and hit 180. Barry is the Barry I know and remember is the one that was in Pittsburgh, who was just one of the best athlete I've ever seen. And like I say, he I I think for sure from what he has done on the field, if he didn't even go to San Francisco, I think he'd have been in the Hall of Fame.
Well, let me say this too. John Parada, who even Jim Leland agrees, and many others, Jim Rooker, maybe one of the best, finest baseball writers anywhere in the country, has a special bond with Barry, and always has nothing but positive things to say about him and their relationship. So I do believe down deep there is a good side to Barry Bonds, and I hope, as in some presidents we've seen decades or even years after they leave office, that people start to recognize and remember the good that they did. Do you think it's still not too late for Barry to maybe right the ship and correct mistakes, because we've all made them, and hopefully someday he'll be enshrined in Cooperstown where he rightfully belongs?
You know, our society is a very forgiving society. We have forgiven a lot of people who have done a lot of things wrong, and there's nobody, including all three of us, on
the Amen.
That are perfect. And we've all done things that absolutely we're not proud of. However, if you're contrite and you say you made a mistake and you move on and become a better person for it, that's my wish and that's my hope. Barry treated my daughter tremendously. He treated my family great. He did a lot of good things that no one knows about. There's some good in Barry Bonds. And it's just sad that a lot of people didn't get to see it.
You know, a real quick sidebar. Today, Joe Mystic, who I just have such respect for, teaches law, worked with the Maslow administration. Ted, I'm sure you know him. I'm not sure if you do, Rich, but we were talking about this big bocce tournament that they had. Dan Onorato was there, and Spatty was there, Paul Spadafora. And Ted, this gives you an opportunity to talk about someone who really, and I've known him like a brother for years, and we've kind of drifted apart a bit. And I told Joe, I said, you know, Joe, give him my mobile number. I always had a special place in my heart for who I believe was not just a great man in the ring, but just there was a side to him on the outside that a lot of people didn't see, but I did. And that was love of community, family, friends. And he just got caught up in it, as we all have, including me from time to time. Can Paul Spadafore maybe never win the title, Ted, but can he change his legacy in Pittsburgh, do you think?
I think so. I think, he's going to have to make a move. He's getting up there, but I think he can change his legacy as a person, and I think Paul has started doing that. He got caught up with the crowds, and we all get that. I mean, you get caught up in everybody's telling you how great you are and that you're almost invisible and impervious and nothing can happen to you. And he got caught up with that, got a little bit ahead of himself, and the last time I saw Paul, he seemed to be a different person, much more contrite. But I think as a boxer, his days are quickly, very quickly going by. And but you look at guys like Jim and Rich. They are Ohio Valley people. I have never heard anybody say anything but the most positive, unbelievable
Never.
Things about those guys.
Never.
And it doesn't matter if they win another pennant or where they are. Nobody that I've heard has ever said one thing bad about them. They are still looked upon, in my opinion, as two of the most positive, great guys for this Ohio Valley, this Pittsburgh, the whole area. Wherever they are in baseball, it doesn't matter. This area claims them, and whether it's right or wrong, they don't have a choice. This area is going to claim them as two of the great guys in sports history that this area will ever see. And I just don't know that Paul can ever reach that kind of status, but at least in his community he can get back. But Paul can't do it on the playing field, and sometimes you don't, or in the ring. But sometimes you don't always do it in those arenas. Sometimes you do it elsewhere.
Well,
hey, Rob, I want to
go ahead.
Real quick, I just want to tell the people out there, I've seen you guys operate for a number of years now, and I don't think you know the effect that you two people, especially in these last couple of years, have had on the people of the tri-state area. You brought sports to a new level. Ted, you created so many jobs for people when you took over that Waterford Park and turned it into a wonderful place, and it was so neat to go there to the concerts, to the boxing matches. You made it a wonderful, wonderful life for a lot of people. And Rob, you've spread, I mean, you talk about dogs, you talk about gardens, you got it all going on. You two don't realize the effect that you've had on the people of the tri-state area and the Ohio Valley. And I'm so proud to be one, even be mentioned with you two guys as being Ohio Valley guys.
Well, let me tell you, some of my fondest memories, and the older you get, the more you look back. Not all good, so you savor the good. And the best was when I was doing a Potter, meaning East Liverpool High School sporting event for the local station, and you would show up and sit next to me and spend time with me on the air. And I say this from the bottom of my heart. You're not only competitive and good at what you do in baseball, but I think if you would ever make a transition into this field, I think we'd all be looking for work. You're tremendous, and you're a great man, and I just have such respect for you and Jim, who's not just a good baseball man, but he's a great husband, he's a marvelous father, and he's a good friend. The last 30 seconds, why is it, though, that people in sports love to play the ponies and love to play the slots? Because I could have literally made a living just hanging out at Mountaineer.
My wife told me this. She goes, you're such a competitor, and most people in sports are such competitors. They think they can beat the machine. They think they can beat the horses. And that's how you are. You're competitive. You have to have, Don Zimmer told me this. He said, I have to have competition in my life every day. And I'm the same way. I know Ted's the same way, and I know you are. And
that's
so
right.
Is Jim.
Hey, listen. Hey, God bless you, you and your family. Rich, I hope it's not too long before we have a chance to break bread and shake hands again in person, okay?
Okay, Rob, Ted, thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
We'll see you. Have a good day.
All right.
Ted, the people you've introduced me to, unbelievable. I could write a book.
This guy is, I'm telling you, just in this area, it is just second to none. And he and Jim, I'll tell you, they will go into a room and they try and hide their celebrity. They want to be one of the people. I mean, they'll do whatever they can. And they're just such great magnetic people that it's hard to... hard for them to do, and they are so much a part of this area that I can't, more than maybe most other athletes or people in pro sports, because they make the people feel that they're one of them, and there's an ownership there that will never ever be relinquished.
All right, let me go to break. We'll take one. We'll be right back.
Weekdays 9 to noon, Marty Griffin's looking out for you.
The Verizon strike, is it really a battle over the middle class? Really? Are they fighting for you?
Marty Griffin.
Or is this a battle of greed and money? On which side? You tell me.
Weekdays 9 to noon, The Inside Story with Marty Griffin. News Radio 1020, KDKA.